Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for January 8, 2013. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Also this half hour, we'll take a look at the energy market with Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. In agricultural news, Brazil has ordered a top-to-bottom audit of its cattle industry in the wake of a growing crisis over a case of mad cow disease. We'll have that and other stories this half hour. And Todd Gleason will be by with another in our series on defining marketing terms. It's all on the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
Here are your last trades and settlements for this Tuesday afternoon in Kansas City. Last trade, March wheat 8.10 1/4 up 2 3/4. July 8.25 1/4 up 3.5. Settlements for wheat in Chicago, March 7.50 1/2 down 3/4. July 7.67 1/4 down 1/2. Back to last trades, March corn 6.89 1/2 up 4. July 6.82 3/4 up 4 1/4. December 5.77 1/2 up 3. January soybeans, these are last trades, 14.10 down 3/4. March 13.89 1/2 up 1. May 13.75 1/4 down 2 1/2. July 13.72 down 1 1/2. November 12.84 3/4 unchanged. January soybean meal, last trade here, 4.10.90 up 2.40. March 4.11 up 2.10. Last trades in the soybean oil pit as well. January 49.15 down 35. March 49.56 down 40. February live cattle, last trade 132.47 1/2 down 52 1/2. April 136.07 1/2 down 62 1/2. January feeders, last trade 152.52 1/2 down 72 1/2. And February lean hogs, last trade 86.22 1/2 now 20, and they are down 10. And those are your last trades and settlements in Kansas City and Chicago.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Looking at meteorologist Drew Leonard's weather highlights, he says that rainfall of 2/10 to 3/4 of an inch will occur in the Texas Panhandle and western Oklahoma Wednesday into Thursday, with a few counties getting up to 1 1/4 inches. Nebraska, Colorado, and northwestern Kansas will be the driest, with insignificant amounts of moisture likely for many areas. Cold air will pool into the western U.S. this weekend and next, setting the stage for another storm or two to develop in the Delta or southeastern states and move northeast. These storms will produce abundant rain in the eastern U.S. and slowly bring greater amounts of snowfall into the plains ahead of the coldest air. Temperatures will be colder than usual in most of the western U.S. later this week through early next week. Brazil summer crops are still rated very good, with the exception of Bahia and immediate neighboring areas where it has become too dry. Relief to dryness in northeastern Brazil is not very likely for a while.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit of Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
Yeah. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Good afternoon, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Dave.
10 years ago, when I first took over this seat or thereabouts, 10 or 9 years ago, if you were looking at December 13 corn with a range of 579.5 to 570, we would have called that a volatile day.
Would have been wild.
Not so much now.
Pretty quiet. Pretty quiet in today's terms of the volatility, the way it's increased. Also pretty high prices compared to 9 years ago, Dave.
All of that is very true, although at 577 and three quarters, producers probably not going to do much selling. They're looking for $6 or better, I bet.
Well, you'd be right, Dave, because very, very few people called up wanting to hedge any corn today. But it is right. And, of course, we've had a change a lot. Seed corn was also probably about a tenth the cost it is today,
well,
too.
So. Yeah, all the prices have really gone up, if you think about it.
They have. Uh-huh. All except sponsoring at WILL.
Oh, well, yeah, thank you for that. We should look at the choppiness of the market. I think in terms of the soybeans especially, it was a very rough day.
You know, we remember the funds are supposed to start their rebalancing act today.
Yeah, about 10 to 2 or something, the index funds?
Yeah, they were. They were supposed to start that today, and they do that on the close. And if we remember, they told us they were going to probably sell some beans and wheat on the close. The wheat didn't take it too hard, did close off its highs fairly well. But the beans did go into red territory, and that did happen in the last couple, 3 minutes. And we think that's part of the rebalancing act that happened there. The corn did keep green numbers on itself for today. We've struggled and puttered around, but we've been awfully hard sold on this. And the RSIs are very low, and we're having a hard time finding many people that really want to sell this market here, right here.
So do we then also account the soybean meal $2.10 increase to the rebalancing in the January, $2 in the March, given I think the rumor was they were going to actually buy some soybean meal from the index funds?
Well, that would be what was all over the news wires, Dave, and you beat me to the punch on talking about that, so we're going to just say that you're right and I agree.
So this is the kind of day it seems like we're going to have for the remainder of the week. I mean, heading into the reports, I think everybody's probably where they want to be, generally speaking, and nobody probably really wants to stick their neck out too far, given the 5 years in a row that we've all been surprised in the corn pit.
You know, if you looked at the options that go off Friday and the close, the weekly options, it was going to take about 25 cents to buy an at-the-money call and at-the-money put.
Mm.
So basically, they're saying that if on the looking at things, that we're thinking it's going to move at least 15 to 25 cents on Friday because of the numbers the government's going to throw at us. Close on Friday.
Right. And technically, if you look at the charts, a quarter move in the beans does make some sense.
As we look at the charts and we look at things like that, we could have some moves here. I mean, there is no doubt. We're looking very optimistically at what's in South America right now. The production levels have seemed to be in pretty good shape as far as the moisture accumulating and what's forecast. We're on the very dry side, but we're forecasting some awfully big acreage planted for the corn and beans coming into the next year. And, our exports just haven't been stellar as of the last 2 to 3 weeks.
You mentioned South America, and we talked a little bit about that this morning, and I had some time to think about. I was saying 83 million metric tons of soybeans on the Wisely report for Brazil, and you were more in the 82 camp. 81 is where USDA is right now, and I started fishing around, and believe it or not, there are folk out there saying 85.
There are, and there you can find somebody at the far end of a lot of things. We're thinking that the government's going to stay in reason. We're not necessarily saying that 83 or 4 might be a wrong number. We just don't look for the government to pop up
to push it all at once, to push it all in one report.
I mean, that was what we were talking about, not talking about what might actually be there.
So You're left at the end of the day thinking huge crop coming on. You're left at the end of the day thinking Brazil and Argentina, more Argentina, Argentina record soy corn crop perhaps coming on. You're thinking maybe the corn crop will be a little bit bigger here in the U.S. than you think. Maybe if it's a little bit smaller, prices go on the increase. Exports, who are already in the tank, go further in the tank. So rationing is being done on the export side already. I mean, there's probably enough corn maybe to get us through. You might have to move it around a little bit to get it to the geographical spots where it's needed, but there's enough supply altogether to get us through. I don't know. It just seems like if you are in the bear camp, you're probably more smiling today.
Well, I think that everything that has been done to bulls over the last 3 weeks, the talk on most of the news wires is all to, ooh, we maybe missed selling our first 20% of the new crop corn because of where we're at and what we're projecting out here. If you remember well, this is how we felt a year ago. We felt, I mean, even through planting when we got the corn in the ground. We're drier this year to start with in the U.S. The basis levels are at historic levels for this time of year in corn and beans for the U.S. farmer. And the bins are more empty than ever, especially in the Midwest over here. I know very, very little corn still in bins. You know, our ethanol plants, one of them's running, one of them's not over here. You know, it sounds like Linden's ethanol plant up there, Valero, might not even start back in until possibly July or August. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of difference out here. But cash basis, very good. The cash fundamentals seem very tight for the U.S. farmer. And the world outlook looks just a little bit not quite as rosy.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thanks, Dave.
Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
In agricultural news, Brazil's agriculture ministry has announced a top-to-bottom audit of its cattle industry, as the world's top beef exporters try to squelch a growing crisis over a case of mad cow disease. Japan, South Africa, South Korea, Taiwan, and China have suspended all beef imports from Brazil in connection with an atypical case of mad cow that was confirmed last month in an animal that died in 2010 in the southern state of Paraná. Five other countries have imposed some restrictions on beef over the same case. Brazilian officials insist the case poses no risk whatsoever to public health and have not ruled out complaining to the World Trade Organization over the restrictions. A new report from the Nebraska Department of Environmental Quality says that production agriculture in the Nebraska sand hills would see limited interruptions as a result of the proposed reroute of the Keystone XL pipeline. The report to Nebraska Governor Dave Heineman considers the project's potential effects on crop insurance, the ability for farmers to secure bank loans, how the pipeline would affect livestock and crop production and irrigation systems, and whether the pipeline would affect lands enrolled in conservation programs. Heineman will have 30 days to study the 2,000-page report before making a decision on whether the new route eases public concerns about potential aquifer contamination and interruption of critical habitats in the Nebraska sandhills. Monsanto says its net income nearly tripled in the agricultural products company's first quarter as sales of its biotech corn seeds expanded in Latin American countries. Monsanto, which is based in St. Louis, is also raising its profit guidance for the year. Monsanto says that it earned $339 million, or 63 cents a share, in the 3 months ending November 30th, that from $126 million, or 23 cents per share, in the last year's quarter. Revenue climbed 21% to $2.9 billion. The Foreign Agriculture Service will promote U.S.-grown food to Canadian consumers via a new website. The website, www.tasteus.ca, was developed through the FAS's Food and Beverage Alliance. Canadians can find information about food and beverages imported into Canada from the U.S., such as fresh fruit, vegetables, wine, beer, and fruit juices. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Up next, Todd Gleason talks with analyst, broker, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elaine Cubb, in another of our series on marketing terms.
Elaine Cubb joins us. She believes, of course, the key to profitable grain trading is building knowledge about the fundamental practices of the industry. Today, she'll help us discuss just exactly what it is that defines the two words, fungibility and liquidity. But we'll start off in kind of a different area, but it's related to these, and talk about the trouble with cash contracts. As you see it, Elaine, what are the fundamentals behind this, and what makes up a cash contract, and how do you develop it on a modern futures exchange, those sorts of things?
Well, Todd, we kind of touched on this last week when we talked about counterparty risk, the idea that you might write a forward cash contract with some grain buyer, but have the risk of maybe that grain buyer going bankrupt and not being able to honor their check to you. Or on the other hand, you have cash grain buyers who, you know, what if the farmer does not bring in the grain that they committed to sell? So that's one of the problems, if there are problems, if you think about problems with cash grain contracts, that's really it, is this idea that you're really dealing with very specific samples of actual physical commodities, and those things may not move around like you expect them to, or may not have the quality that you expect them to. They're really not standard.
Right. And so once we get into the counterparty risk, there's both at fault and no fault risk?
There can be. I mean, there are certainly situations. Let's say there's a drought. This is a really good, timely situation, and a farmer committed to sell some grain to a buyer, but just literally does not have that grain to sell. In that instance, you know, he didn't commit a fraud. He didn't do something wrong. And yet, nonetheless, the buyer was counting on that in their position for their accounting. So the cash still needs to come from somewhere. The money still needs to come from somewhere. And in that case, you have to buy out of your cash grain contract. And that's not always an easy thing to do, because there's no standard way. There's no really good centralized place that you can go to find a new price for that new cash contract that you have to buy out of.
So now let's define a couple of other related terms, fungibility and liquidity. And these deal with, well, liquidity, of course, with the futures market, but fungibility comes in where?
Fungibility is directly tied to this idea of these cash grain contracts. Let's say you want to get out of a cash grain contract you already made. A fungible asset is one that you could easily convert to cash, or that there is a known price. It's interchangeable with other assets, or specifically cash. So a cash grain contract is not particularly fungible, because there's not always an opportunity to turn that into cash. The buyer that you want to the counterparty that you want to get out of that with may not be willing to do so, or may make it difficult or put up barriers for you to do so. So in that sense, cash grain contracts are not very fungible, whereas futures contracts, where there's always an entire universe of people that are always willing to exchange a futures contract for actual money, for asset, for cash in your brokerage account, that's a very fungible asset.
If you've done that, you're into a liquid market at that point.
So now you're in a liquid market, but futures markets can be more or less liquid on any given day. Liquidity comes into how easily you can change that thing into cash and how that affects the price. So in an illiquid futures market, you may change your futures contract into cash that day, but by doing so, there's not a lot of other volume going on in the market. There's not a lot of other people participating. So the price impact of you doing that, it can become very large in an illiquid market.
Yeah, so the goal of an exchange is to have a liquid market for a futures. How does it make it smooth and liquid and set a standard price for grain?
Well, it has market makers, and it certainly tries to encourage a lot of participation from a lot of different people. You get the commercial traders that are in there hedging. They also try to encourage speculators. They make an environment that is conducive to speculating, even the high-frequency trading. The exchanges love that, obviously because they're making money from all of the trades that are happening, but also because it adds liquidity. It adds more volume and more price points for people to participate in and keep a liquid price movement going on.
Thank you so much, Elaine.
Thanks, Todd.
That's commodity broker, analyst, and author of Mastering the Grain Markets, Elaine Cubb, for University of Illinois Extension. I'm Todd Gleason.
Joining us now for our look at the energy markets is Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services in Chicago, Illinois. Good afternoon, Steve.
Good afternoon.
It's the first energy broadcast for us of the year, and I guess it's perfect timing because the EIA has got some numbers for 13, don't they?
Yeah, they actually came out with their short-term energy outlook, but in that outlook, they did provide a kind of glimpse at what they're expecting for 2013. They're basically looking at crude prices averaging around 89.5 from around 94 that we averaged in 2012. Mm. They're expecting Brent, which many people have been watching pretty closely because of its wide premium, to actually see that premium narrow as we start to see some of these supplies moving from the mid-continent going toward the Gulf, helping to narrow the need for import levels. So overall, it's looking like a year that will start to see some relief on the supply front, which should translate into lower prices.
Well, that would be a very welcome thing for many people, lower prices. And from the big picture, long-term trend to tomorrow's short-term weekly trend, we do have a report out due tomorrow. I think the trade was pretty shocked a week ago when we got the numbers and we saw a huge drop in the inventories. And I guess we're going to build on that a bit again.
Well, actually, they are looking at that starting to reverse, and seasonally that does tend to reverse as we move into through January into February and March. Typically, at the end of the year, you start to see those crude inventories fall, and we did see that in a pretty dramatic fashion as they move their inventories around for tax purposes. This week, we're looking at an increase in crude stocks of about 2 million. Gas and distillate inventories are also expected to build by 2 million as well.
And very quickly, a word about the crack, please.
Well, I think what we've seen is some turnaround. Today, though, there was a refinery fire out of Port Arthur, which helped support the product markets with crude pretty much unchanged. I think we are seeing some turn in that crack, which is the margin to the crude oil, and that should continue to be a hallmark of this market as well in terms of seeing a weakening in gasoline prices.
Thank you, Steve.
Sure.
Steve Platt of Archer Financial Services, and he is in Chicago, Illinois. It's National English Toffee Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1800, the first soup kitchens in London were opened to serve the poor. In 1823, Alfred Wallace was born. Wallace was a British naturalist who developed a theory of natural selection independently of Charles Darwin. In 1825, Eli Whitney died. Inventor of the cotton gin, he also developed the concept of mass-producing interchangeable parts. Whitney introduced the idea into the manufacture of muskets for the U.S. government. In 1956, Greenleaf Pickard died, a U.S. electrical engineer. His invention of the crystal detector was one of the first devices widely used for receiving radio broadcasts. In 1997, Melvin Calvin died, an American biochemist. He was one of a team that used carbon-14 isotopes as a tracer to map the complete route that carbon travels through a plant during photosynthesis, starting with the absorption of atmospheric carbon dioxide to its conversion into carbohydrates and other organic compounds. The Calvin group showed that sunlight acts on the chlorophyll in a plant to fuel the manufacturing of organic compounds, rather than on carbon dioxide, as was previously believed. And in 1998, Walter E. Dimer died, an American businessman. He accidentally invented bubble gum in 1928 while experimenting with recipes for a chewing gum base. By the way, the very first batch was pink, the color that remains to this day. And that's This Day in Agricultural History. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at agricultural weather is meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon.
I want to start in the U.S., and I want to start in the western corn belt of the U.S. and have you assess precipitation chances for the next week or so.
Well, in some areas they look excellent. In fact, we're going to be looking at some significant rains here over the next two or three days across some of the southern plains. Texas is going to do very well, central and eastern Oklahoma, central and eastern areas of Kansas, and this precipitation in the form of rain and snow will then extend north. It'll affect Missouri. It'll get up into Iowa, some areas, even some of the real dry areas of southeastern New Mexico, Panhandle of Texas, southwest Kansas, could get into a little bit of the action as well. Unfortunately, the precipitation is going to be lighter as you get into central and western areas of Nebraska, some of the Dakotas. However, there's a second system that will impact those areas with an Arctic chill and some snow as we get into this Friday and upcoming weekend time frame. Then we're going to see significant rains developing across the lower Mississippi Valley with this pattern that's evolving and changing.
And then in the eastern U.S., it'll be warmer than usual?
Well, it will be, but it's temporary. Don't get used to it. When you have a big Arctic outbreak like we're going to see in the central and west over the next week, you push warm air out ahead of it, but eventually that cold air will march east. So while in the next 5 to 7 days, many areas of the Midwest, East Coast, and Northeast will experience much above normal temperatures. That will transition to a much colder weather pattern next week.
Turn our attention to South America, and I guess we're all keeping an eye on Bahia, but I'm hearing there's not a lot of chances for precipitation there.
No, there isn't. In fact, that's one area in the South American area that is going to remain dry. Now, as you go a little bit more north, the weather pattern is going to be more stormy and certainly is going to favor many areas of central northern Brazil's growing areas. But Argentina, right now in a pattern that's looking pretty dry here for the next week.
And very hot temperatures, too, yes.
Yeah, very warm, kicking in some warm summertime heat down there. I do see maybe later on, let's say in the 6 to 10 day period, towards that 10 day period where precipitation patterns will shift a little bit and favor Argentina a little bit more, but at least for the next week, hot and dry conditions will continue.
Let's touch a couple of places we don't normally go to, one being China. Things pretty ideal there?
Well, it has been cold. In fact, there has been some record cold. You're not hearing about it much in the news, but there is a lot of cold that's been over in Asia, India, China. Those areas experiencing some severe cold, and at least in the short term, that's going to continue.
Thank you very much there, Don.
Thank you.
Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and that is today's Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.